In 2009, we spoke with Graham O'Donnell and Igor Shvets as they launched the Spirit of Ireland project to provide renewable energy for Ireland. Now, that project is ongoing and developing, but they're now launching Energy Cooperatives Ireland. The idea is to assist local groups, a minimum of 7 people, to come together and form their own co-op and, with their help, create energy projects that can provide communities with an ongoing income and help put unused skills of electricians, engineers and such like currently out of work back to work. However, renewable energy, while no doubt desirable in its perfect form, can have some drawbacks, and we know about wind energy. The wind does not always blow. I'm joined by Pat Gill, founding member of Spirit of Ireland, and by Val Martin of the European Platform Against Wind Farming. But first of all, with Pat Gill. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Pat.
We've talked about Spirit of Ireland, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it again. This is a new initiative from the Spirit of Ireland people, this Energy Cooperatives. What's it all about?
Well, the Spirit of Ireland initiative was launched by people who had a general interest in renewable energy, but also analysed many of the problems that are extant. The past couple of years, the project has developed
We leave that one alone, because I know you've been talking to the minister and so on, and the idea of Spirit of Ireland, which is storing energy in massive reservoirs, is one that's currently being scientifically, economically examined, and export markets being sourced and prices being looked at. We'll come back to that again. But this new initiative is more than about wind. It's about other things.
It's about other things. It's about getting ordinary people involved in renewable energy. Over the past century or so, we've kind of lost touch with our energy supply. You know, 150 years ago, if you wanted to warm yourself in the evening, you went out and you collected firewood. Now you click a switch.
You're not suggesting we raid Caolte's lands and steal the wood?
Absolutely not. No, we don't need to go back to that basic level of connecting to our energy supply. But energy is becoming more expensive now. There are 400,000 people with prepay energy meters.
So they're finding it a bit of a struggle to meet their energy bills.
Yeah.
Now, the kind of ways that we used to have energy, everybody knows about the mill wheel. You had a small river, or maybe a diversion from a river, which powered the local mill. They're all gone.
Well, they're not in use. They're still there. The civil engineering in most cases is still there. And if we add modern technology to the old civil engineering, suddenly we have viable energy sources. And as renewable energy happens within local communities, why not get ordinary people involved?
You're saying that there is the capacity for hydro development of local power all over the place?
All over the place.
Now, it could mean in the summer there'd be nothing there to power the mill race.
And that's the beauty of renewable energy. It encompasses every form of energy generation.
So if you've got a surplus in your local town, flog it when you have it and then import from the grid when you don't.
Exactly. Exactly.
What other sort of things are you talking about? Can you have biomass? What other things can small communities do for themselves?
Hydro is the most obvious, but biomass has lots of opportunities. And biomass is a very wide area. I mean, you've anaerobic digestion of waste. You can grow energy crops like miscanthus and whatever else. You can have community heat and power schemes. And one of the projects which is way open for exploitation is Ireland's first energy, or Ireland's first power station, was actually in Killarney in the 1880s. Killarney was the first metropolitan area in the British Isles. In fact, they even beat New York to have electric streetlights. And that energy was produced at the Flesk Mills in Killarney. And that continued right up to...
And was that hydro...
That was hydro generation.
So all over the place there are sources of hydroelectric power which sometimes were in use, others have never been exploited. Do you have any idea to what extent that might contribute?
I think studies have shown that if we were to develop most of those, we could have 30 megawatts, which doesn't sound a lot. But 30 megawatts would provide a reasonable income for a lot of people and a lot of local communities. If we then extend that out to some combined heat and power plants, suddenly the figures go up. We can have local wind farms. Later on, maybe within 2 or 3 years, we can have community cooperatives exploiting wave power.
Now, you talk about groups of seven or more people. What about individual farmers? I mean, any of us who've seen The Wizard of Oz will recall seeing in the black and white section before it goes into colour, as the tornado is brewing, and there is that structure of a windmill. Mm-hmm. On the farm in Kansas.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see few enough of those small-scale windmills around the place, but you wonder, would it be economical for a farmer to put one of those up, one of the small ones, not necessarily to pump water, but simply to power the milking parlour?
Now, that's part of the reason that we've set up Energy Co-ops Ireland, and that is to do the necessary research and development on subjects like that, so that the farmer wouldn't be taking a punt.
The information would be there. The payback time, depending on the typical annual provision of power from one of these machines and the cost of maintenance, et cetera, that would accrue to it.
Absolutely. We now know the figures. Absolutely. You can pick a grid coordinate in Ireland, and within minutes we can tell you what the hydro capacity is for a local river or stream, based on rainfall patterns over the last 30, 40 years, and we can say with almost absolute certainty that you can generate X number of units per year on a hydro site. What we need to do now is do that for biomass, and we need to do that for wind. And a lot of that work is now done. We just have to draw it together.
Now, one of the attractions, of course, in the UK would be the availability of smart metering, so that you can export to the grid as easily as all of us import from the grid. That does seem to be a big deficit here. That, you know, suppose you do set up a co-op of local windmills or whatever it might be, and you have a surplus when the river's in flood, for example, but you can't get it to the grid, you can't export it, so you squander it.
Well, later on this year, that problem, I believe, will be sorted. The name has gone out of my head. There is a group, Dudley Stewart and his group, who are developing...
That's the brother of
Duncan.
Duncan Stewart, who's been playing with windmills for decades, in fact.
Dudley is the man that puts the figures together. Dudley is the practical member of the family. I hope Duncan doesn't take offence at that. But that group will be in a position later this year, hopefully, to buy the excess electricity generated by local groups and sell it through the grid. They're developing the engineering and the financial and the regulatory system to do that.
Here's a question. I don't know whether you can answer this, but if you've got a local river, for example, who owns it? Who owns the power? Clearly, someone who puts in a generator can make a big claim to taking the power, but who do they have to deal with? Is it the local council? Is it Waterways Ireland?
It's a lot of different groups, and that's probably one of the great strengths that energy co-ops will bring to the table, is that we will provide a one-stop shop, so that at the present moment, you've probably got to interact with 7 or 8 different agencies. We'd like to have that streamlined, but until that happens, well, it helps if you know right from day one what you've got to do.
Are there technical difficulties? For example, if someone has a bit of bog and they stick up photovoltaic collectors, is there a technical difficulty? You know, you're creating DC energy, not AC, and you want to get that into the grid.
Not really, no. A lot of those technological-type problems are easily sorted off the shelf. A lot of the problems are regulatory and the nefarious attitude.
OK, Val Martin of the European Platform Against Wind Farming is on the line. Val, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
You've been listening to Pat's exposition of the latest idea from Spirit of Ireland, Energy Cooperatives Ireland, you know, harnessing local hydro, local wind, biomass, whatever else. What do you think of the idea in principle?
Well, first of all, the obvious thing is that this group, the Spirit of Ireland, Pat, have been plugging pump storage, and they're fully in favour, and I've engaged with them on the internet in putting up the plans our government has for a £30 billion expansion of the wind energy programme, and which is basically illegal under the Atlas Convention and international law. But I have counted six...
Sorry, hang on a second. Why would it be illegal? There's wind farms all over Europe.
Because the Atlas Convention states clearly that there must be a proper local participation, there must be access to cheap court system to contest anything, and there must be an assessment of the benefits versus the proportional disadvantage to the environment and to people's health. And that is overruled, and a colleague of mine, Pat Swords, is taking a case, a compliance case, in Europe and in Dublin to force our EU to comply with it.
But isn't this all in the realms of speculation at the moment? Because it's only a proposal. We haven't had a paper from government on this at all. We don't know what their attitude is.
We have Airgrid's plans, and we have it all published. They plan to put enough cables to straddle Ireland north to south 15 times. That's pylons. And they plan to put up about 6,000 turbines in total. But may I just say, I've counted six separate issues that Pat Gill has mentioned there.
Go on. Carry on. You can mention them.
So I have to try and address each one of those. Have the Spirit of Ireland, like St. Paul on the road to Damascus, have they come round to our way of thinking when we say that the plan to turbinise this country produces absolutely no saving whatsoever in fossil fuels and no saving on the import of fuel? That's the experience in Denmark, Germany and Spain. And they've crippled these countries, and we are pressing ahead with that. So what I notice here on number one is that they're talking about hydro now. Hydro is the only proven green resource, unless you happen to be a salmon, which works and has been proven to be working. And what's happening here is they're mixing hydropower with wind and all these other things, trying to confuse people into thinking that all forms of so-called renewable energy is it works.
Okay, you're saying that hydro, yes, it works. It's been proven. I mean, we see the mills. But in the Netherlands, for example, the wind was what powered their windmills, so-called.
Yeah.
And that was, over the centuries, a viable source of energy for those communities. Why would it be less so today?
Because we're not talking about grinding corn on windy days as it was in the Netherlands. We're talking about incorporating a system of energy which does not have any correlation between supply and demand, with a grid system which must be balanced in voltage and in frequency, and which is designed to operate within very strict limits.
Val, just a second. Isn't that why the Spirit of Ireland was brought about? Because if you're releasing water, you've effectively turned wind energy into hydro energy, which, as you said, is dependable and predictable and so on. I mean, otherwise Spirit of Ireland would just be windmills, windmills, windmills. It's the pump storage bit that transfers that into the kind of reliable supply that you're talking about.
Well, pump storage exists in Turlough Hill, and there's a seawater. We're talking here on the pump storage about pumping seawater up into the hills of the west of Ireland. And this, it has been, no crowd, including Airgrid or Pirie, the consultancy in Wales, has had any enthusiasm for it. It takes 5 cubic metres, 5 tonnes of water to make a unit of electricity falling 100 metres. The total cost of the pump storage facility, allowing for a freshwater facility, and the size of it, if it was 50 metres deep, it'd cover the Phoenix Park to power Ireland for one day. The cost of that, for borrowed by our public money, would amount to 128 billion when you put the turbines and all up. That's 38 million euros a day, and they'd have to be getting 47.5 cents a unit to be able to cover their basic payback cost, along with a little bit of principal.
All right, Pat Gill.
Yeah.
Val, I don't know where you're getting your figures. First of all, let's separate these things out. Spirit of Ireland was an initiative which was aimed at solving all of the problems of renewable energy in a very, very cost-effective way. But this present initiative is run by people from within Spirit of Ireland. It's not the Spirit of Ireland organisation these are people who live every day in communities.
So let's park Spirit of Ireland, Val, for the moment, because we can have a debate specifically on that when we get a word from government to which way they're...
Let's just say that Val's figures are way out of...
As I say, we'll come back to that another day. Val, the question of local communities harnessing small amounts of hydro... using local labour to refurbish the waterways that would power these things, buying off-the-shelf turbines where there is an amount of water available. Do you have any objection to that in principle, if the numbers add up?
In actual fact, Pat, the National Trust in Britain, in a desperate effort to try what they call the menace of wind turbinisation of Britain, has suggested allowing some of their property and land to be used for hydro. Hydro is a very, very environmentally friendly sort. The big problem is we have very little sites left here in Ireland. There are very, very few.
Well, that's for sure on a large scale, but what about the small scale? I mean, if you think of something like the Falls Hotel in Ennis-Dyman is the one I'm familiar with, but there are places all around the country where, you know, normally aristocratic chaps in the old days put up small turbines which are now defunct. Yeah. I mean, is there a case for scouring the country and allowing local communities to reintroduce these?
Well, the first thing is that many contributors have had ideas on how we could conserve our energy and how we could produce some renewable energy. The problem is that we have been pushed off the scene because of all the hype about windmills and pumped storage. But yes, if you had such suitable sites, but I know from my experience, if you take the whole Shannon system, there are very few fast water sites there. There are some. Here in Dunaree Forest Park beside me, we would have one very small one. But the volume in summer there is very, very small. You're talking about the water that had run through a 6-inch pipe, maybe a metre pipe in winter or less. There are sites, and I would have no problem with that. On the case of biomass, no one in the whole world has ever produced figures to show how much diesel must go into the tractors to produce it and transport it. So we need to have a look at that, and we cannot look at these things because we're not being allowed to be heard. And the Irish engineers have made this quite point because there's such a frenzy to put up windmills and other stuff that we can't get down to the basic science. So I would have no problem with that particular point.
I just want to ask, just on a general point about the wind, we're told, and I suppose we in this case can believe what we're told, that we have one of the best wind resources in the world. If they don't make sense, why are other countries doing it? I mean, the graph for fossil fuels is inexorably up. Sometimes there's a dip, it goes down below $100 a barrel or whatever. But if you look at the graph from the last couple of decades, the price of fossil fuels is just going up, up, up. Maybe it's too early to build all the windmills, but is it inevitable that that's the direction we'll be taking long term?
Well, if we were to put up, Pat, 80,000 windmills in the Republic of Ireland, we cannot provide any power on a calm day. There are at least six studies commissioned which show, including one in Germany, that there is no saving whatsoever. In actual fact, Ireland's windmills, we have 1,450 megawatts of wind at the minute, are consuming energy. And the Spirit of Ireland people denied this was happening, and they forced me to write to the minister, and I got a letter back from him to state that they're getting energy free and using it in. And he also states that he has no idea whatsoever if Ireland's current windmills are producing any power or saving anything.
Tell me this, quick question. How are the windmills actually using energy? I know energy is consumed in the making of the concrete and the materials that go into the windmill, but on an ongoing basis, how are windmills using energy?
We're using energy, number one, there's a three-phase line coming out of every wind farm and a three-phase line going in. They're used to move the yaw mechanism. To keep them going, they get priority dispatch. Every single unit of energy that's produced in a windmill must be taken by law by the conventional generators. And they use energy to keep defrosted in the summer, to keep them turning at near cut-in speed so they can avail of every little piece of energy that there is that's blown by the wind, and for at least 12 other different things, including
last words on this. Windmills as consumers of energy rather than energy generators.
That's absolute rubbish. And I think I'd like to invite Val to sit down and have a proper chat and we'll go through figures. But just to get back to why we're here. Ireland's first power station was in Killarney, County Kerry at Flesk Mills. Let's reinvigorate it. We've got a large-scale co-op in County Clare, Mount Callan. That's local people, 78 megawatts of wind.
Okay, so there are ways, you're saying, around the country, not just wind, but other ways in which local communities can generate energy for themselves. We have to leave it there. Val Martin of the European Platform Against Wind Farming, who was joining us on the phone, thank you very much. And Pat Gale, a founding member of Spirit of Ireland and now involved in Energy Cooperatives Ireland, thank you very much.